Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Creation of the Kumaras and Others. Text number 6. On the refusal of the sons to obey the order of their father, there was much anger generated in the mind of Brahma, which he tried to control and not express. Purport. Brahma is the director in charge of the motive passion of material nature. Therefore, it was natural for him to become angry on the refusal of his sons to obey his order. Although the Kumaras were right in such acts of refusal, Brahma, being absorbed in the mode of passion, could not check his passionate anger. He did not express it, however, because he knew that his sons were far enlightened in spiritual advancement, and thus he should not express his anger before them. Om Ganatimirvasya Sadakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Sri Chaitanya Mahaprasadam Sadhutam Yena Bhutale Svayaprabha Kadamayam Tadati Svapatam Dikam Mukkam Karoti Vachalam Pankulam Gayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bandhe Sri Guru Dinatayam. When you're making garlands, especially carnations, those little things there jab in the neck. So Prabhupada had this thing stuck in his neck all day yesterday and had to tolerate it. So what you do is you peel them off and you get a softer bit on the bottom. Right? So when you're making a garland, you should take those spiky bits off so that the person who wears the garland can actually wear it, rather than have spiky bits poking in the neck. We won't embarrass the person who made the garland. Just like that. Any more than that. Okay, so the first point is that Brahma is in charge of the motive passion. Therefore, it was natural for him to become angry on the refusal of his sons to obey his order. Were correct. In such acts of refusal. But Brahma, being absorbed in a mode of passion, could not check his passionate anger. So I think it's natural for all parents, dads, to get upset when their sons don't do what they tell them to do. Is that right? Any dads here with sons? How do you feel when your son doesn't do what you tell him to do? Little put his knuckle out a little bit, and then he go and he hit me right there. Because I knew all of the things to do. I knew exactly how to refuse my father's instructions so that he would automatically hit me. Right, you know. So there's a relationship between the father and the son, and the daughter too, for that matter. And generally, the children are produced as a result of passion. Right? Is that right? So that's why there must be this connection. Although in this case, it's mentioned here that Lord Brahma is in the mode of passion. Is in charge of the mode of passion of material nature. So, you know, he personifies that nature, or that nature. And you know, mode of passion means strong desire. Symptoms of the mode of passion, one of them is very strong desire. As a consequence of strong desire, what comes next? Anger? Karma, krodha. In one sense, yes. When desire is frustrated, then comes anger. Right? If desire is satisfied, then what comes next in a passionate person? More desire. Yeah, more desire. In the mode of goodness, there's still desire. And there's, well, in the mode of passion, there's action, activity. Right? Pushed by the desires that arise from the mode of passion. That doesn't, you know, sometimes devotees make this mistake. A devotee is very active and so they say they're passionate, but that may not be the case. You know, could you say that Srila Prabhupada was passionate because he travelled around the world, you know, 12 times and established so many temples and collected so many disciples and printed so many books, very active? Does that mean he's in the mode of passion?
No, transcendental.
Yeah, transcendental, or at least the mode of goodness. There are symptoms of activity, or shall we say, action has its symptoms. The mode of ignorance has its symptoms by what kind of activity? What kind of activity is that?
Sleep.
Yeah? Inaction, right? It's not activity, actually. Sleeping, but indolence. Sleeping, you know, being lazy, not wanting to do things. And that can be mistaken for the mode of goodness, too. Right? In the Brahmachari ashram, we wanted to do something. Oh no, Prabhu, I've got to do my study. I've got to do this, I've got to do that. He doesn't want to do what he's told to do because he's lazy. But they might think, oh, he's in the mode of goodness. He's not too active. He's not too aggressive. But it's not that he's in the mode of goodness. He's just lazy. Mistaken for the mode of goodness. And activity can be mistaken for the mode of passion because it's very active but determined, even if there are setbacks, not disturbed, patient. So Krishna mentions actually, activity, action is karma, is not so easy to understand. One has to look at the symptoms and then judge. So it's natural for Brahma to become frustrated and disturbed, because he has his service too. He has his service that needs to be fulfilled. And it's ordinarily or naturally expected and accepted that the sons will take up the business of the father. And so this is a bit of a shock. Although, children not, or sons not following their father's instructions is not much of a shock these days. In fact, it might even be considered to be the norm. And so, most dads are angry, or at least disappointed with their sons and daughters. But not always. Obviously, not always. So, given the circumstances, it was natural, it's not a surprise that Brahma was upset by the fact that his sons wouldn't follow his order. But it's also natural that they refuse. Also natural that they refuse. In the previous purport, Prabhupada says, those who are serious about gaining release from material bondage should not be entangled in the false relationship of family bondage. No? Those who are serious. And that means, ipso facto, that if you're a householder, then you're second or even third or fourth class. Yeah. Is that right? What do you think? Those who are serious about gaining release from material bondage should not be entangled in the false relationship of family bondage. Hands up those who are caught up in the false relationship of family bondage. No? No, there's a few who are not. In illusion. But anyway, that's another thing. Even Lord Chaitanya was prepared to do anything to keep his mother happy. Right? So was he caught up in the false relationship of family bondage or what? No? Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. No? Interesting. Interesting point. Because, to a degree, everybody has to acknowledge, the where they've come from and who to whom they owe a debt. Although it's mentioned, Prabhupada quotes the verse, "Devashi bhutokta ninam pitrinam na kinkaro na kinkaro." What does that mean, na kinkaro? One doesn't have to be a servant of all of these others if he's a servant of Krishna. On that basis, the Kumaras were, the four Kumaras were justified in not accepting the order of their father, because they're already on a transcendental platform, and as such then on the transcendental platform they were above the familial connections, the familial relationships. But even for the devotees, the familial relationships, whilst we may transcend them, theoretically, Lord Chaitanya teaches us a very interesting example. And there are a number of examples, actually, in this regard. Lord Chaitanya didn't give in any indication to his young wife or to his mother that he was going to leave them. No? He just left. Right? He didn't give them any indication. He didn't upset them or disturb them. And he encouraged Raghunath Das. Raghunath Das was a renunciate from a very early age. You know, he had the association of devotees like Haridas Thakur as a child. And Haridas Thakur's friends. So these are very elevated devotees. So Raghunath Das was naturally a renunciate, and he was always trying to run away from home. And Lord Chaitanya told him, he said, don't do that. Don't do that. You'll upset everything. You'll disturb everyone by this kind of behaviour. Internally, you may be attached to Krishna. But externally, you should maintain your attachment to your family and a family life. You know, in other words, don't upset or disturb the status quo. Even if one is a highly elevated renunciate. You know, as a very elevated renunciate, we can easily give up our responsibilities to our family and friends. But of course, it's interesting in the case of Korma, the Brahmana, who wanted to travel with Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya forbade him. He said, no, you should stay here and fulfill your family responsibilities. But if you want to be with me, then preach. Right? And of course, you know, in our society of devotees, we have seen many devotees prematurely renounce, right? For the sake of preaching or whatever. And that's not wrong. But because they are not mature in their renunciation, then they've again been caught up in the bondage, the false relationship of family bondage. Not so easy to be a renunciate, actually. Actually, it's easy to be a renunciate in one sense, to put on a show, but. You have to have the higher taste. Rasavajam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. You have to have the higher taste. Otherwise, if one doesn't have the higher taste for devotional activities, then one will fall down again into material consciousness. And we've seen that often enough, or we've experienced it often enough. So, the Kumaras were justified. Lord Brahma was justified. And so there has to be some resolution. So as a consequence, Brahma knew that he should check his anger or his frustration. Because of the exalted character, the exalted nature of his sons. because of their deep meditation or their deep realization and understanding of their relationship with the Lord, which is exhibited by the fact that they didn't appear to be older than about 5 or 6 years of age in terms of their physiological character, you know, their physiological bearing or presentation, then in one sense, it was probably appropriate for Lord Brahma not to ask them to get married, you know, to get married, basically, because they're already very elevated devotees. They're detached, naturally detached, naturally renounced. But, you know, there's this etiquette, there's this very powerful and strong responsibility of a son to follow the instructions of the father. This is, you know, this is just a, and Lord Brahma is a very elevated personality also. But he recognized the right of the Kumaras, and especially because of their spiritual advancement, to continue as renunciates, to not have to become entangled or to be caught up in material affairs. Now, there are other examples where, that this is coming up in the Bhagavatam, where devotees, even elevated personalities like Prithu Maharaj, he was also very elevated and very renounced. And yet Lord Brahma and other sages came and talked him in. He also didn't want to take the householder life. But Lord Brahma and others came and talked him into it, right? Even though he didn't want to. And so he accepted that service even though his natural inclination was to not be so engaged. So in this particular case, Lord Brahma knew, or he realized, after having asked the Kumaras, that they help him and enter into the householder ashram. He must have realized at some point that was not the right request. Right? Because he was going to get angry, but he didn't. He checked it. And it's interesting, Prabhupada says here, he did not express it because he knew that his sons were far enlightened in spiritual advancement, and thus he should not express his anger before them. Now, you could ask, well, if he knew that, why did he ask them to do it in the first place? Right? If he knew that his sons were so advanced, he must have discovered that after he asked them. Right? Because, you know, Lord Brahma is not a, you know, he's a very elevated personality. You know, it's only a few pages ago that he was talking directly to Krishna, to the Lord. So, Lord Brahma realized probably, perhaps a little too late, that he may have offended, you know, saintly persons. And so then, even though he was the father. Right, so the lesson is, the father has to respect, or the principle is, the father has to respect the spiritual advancement of the son, if he's more advanced. Or when he's more advanced than the father. And so honoring the spiritual advancement of the of his sons, he then had to check his anger. You know, when one is in the association of a senior, more advanced personality, then one is the servant. You know, we see that even in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, when the Bhagavatam was about to be spoken, there are very, very many elevated personalities, saintly persons. And Vyasadeva, you know, one of the most, an incarnation, you know, of the personality of Godhead, and he's present, and yet he stands up when Sukadeva Goswami, his son, comes before him, before everybody. You know, he wasn't upset that, oh, how, you're my son, how come I've got to stand up for you? But otherwise, you know, most parents could be justifiably upset, you know, if their children weren't being respectful to them. And, you know, it's unlikely that they would worship and respect them at age 16, right? What do you do? You know, you want to tell, actually, at age 16, you want to tell your son what to do, but he's totally against, you know, anything that you might want to say, basically, you, most commonly. There may be some transcendental exceptions in the room. Maybe. Right? So, but Vyasadeva stood up when Sukadeva Goswami, and along with others, so many rishis and very great learned personalities were present, but they recognized the spiritual advancement of Sukadeva Goswami. So, you know, this is a very important point. We have to honor and respect the spiritual advancement of the devotees, even if they're younger, even if they're younger than us, or apparently dependent upon us. But that has to be properly that etiquette has to be, you know, carefully followed. Lord Chaitanya knew the situation of Raghunath Das, but yet he said to him, you have to, you know, please your father and your uncle and your wife. You have to act in such a way as to keep them satisfied and happy. The devotees have to do that too. You know, ordinarily we wouldn't respect the materialistic men. But if the materialistic man is in a position of influence or power or respected role, then we also respect them. There are certain etiquettes that have to be honoured, even in social dealings. But especially in spiritual dealings, then we need to know the nature of relationships, who's senior, who's junior, who's a peer. This is this is actually a qualification of a Madhyam Adhikari, which is the platform to which we should all aspire. More than aspire, we should come to that platform of self-realization, which means we know, first of all, where we are, who we are, and where we sit in the scheme of things, and then what our relationships are with others and how we should act in those relationships in order to have proper dealings and proper social connections, social interactions, where society is then stable and steady. So on the one hand, we respect spiritual advancement, but that doesn't mean we also don't, that we don't take into consideration other factors. Ashram, occupation, age, learning, influence, right? If somebody's influential, then we respect that. Where's the influence coming from? Ultimately, it's coming from Krishna. So we should respect it. But here, the general rule is the son should follow the father's instructions. That's the general rule. But there are exceptions to that rule. That as devotees, we should be aware of them. We can't also imitate the renunciation of personalities like the four Kumaras, Chatush Kumar. We can't imitate that and think, oh, well, I'm a brahmachari and so therefore everybody should be respecting me. Right? Just because you're a brahmachari doesn't mean then, for example, not, I don't want to pick on the brahmacharis, but, you know, well, here's an, well, of course, here, I'll tell you why. Here, the brahmacharis don't have to follow the very advanced brahmacharis don't have to follow the order of the householders, right? Because of their renunciation. But actually, in ordinary affairs, the householders are respected before the brahmacharis, right? They're senior. They're older, usually, for a start, and usually more learned. A brahmachari means he's learning. Traditionally. Of course, at a certain point, after having been trained and having passed the test of the guru, then the young men usually have a choice, and usually the choice is to move into the Grihastha ashram. That's considered the next step or the next stage in our purification, in our spiritual progress. If you want to make spiritual progress, then you have to embrace the false relationship of family bondage. Huh? That sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Huh? Which is why many of the brahmacharis, you know, they don't want to do that. Woo-wee. Read all the way through the Bhagavatam. The false relationship of family bondage. Right? But most of us have to go through that. That's actually our purification. It's our means of advancement. It's the way we make advancement in spiritual life. And to falsely renounce that stage of life can be a tragic mistake. Right? And so, you know, you get the situation where somebody at 70 years of age says, oh, I think I might get married now. That was the decision you were supposed to make when you were 25 or 30 years of age. Huh? And so ordinarily at 70 years of age, if you've gone through the process, and we're just learning this in one sense as a society, we're learning these things. At the age of 70, that's when you should be securing your spiritual position, not wanting to pursue a marriage. Is that right? In general, right? That's the system. So the respect is ordinarily given to the householders. That's why it's kind of, you know, here the Kumaras appear to be disrespectful to their father. and in the terms of the ashram, but it is possible, and the Kumaras are an example. There are some brahmacharis who will remain brahmacharis because of their natural inclination and their natural renunciation. So we have to look for that and encourage it. But for many of the brahmacharis, most of them, we will encourage the next stage is to move into the grihastha ashram. That's the general procession, or the general progress of things. And that's also to be respected and to be honoured. Because you can make an advancement. There's no restriction, and in fact you'll make more advancement in that ashram, because what does Prabhupada say? In that ashram, when one is an honest sweeper in the street, right? Rather than a charlatan meditator. Right? A charlatan meditator. What's a charlatan meditator doing? What's a charlatan meditator doing? Showing off. What was that, Sri Krishna? That's right, yes. Show bottle. Monkey. He says he's a monkey. Another variant. Strong. You know, you're going to get a strong opinion from another variant. Monkey business. Makata Vairagya. He's making a show of renunciation, lives in the forest, sleeps in a different tree every night with a different monkey. Monkey wife. Wife might be generous. That might be a generous. They have the dominant male and he has other females. So to be sensitive to these relationships. And Brahma is sensitive because he's realized the elevated qualities and status of his sons. And so he's realized the inappropriateness of his response. And so he's checking it. You know, the natural response of a father is to be upset if the son doesn't do what he asks him to do. That's just normal. But if they're more elevated than ourselves, more renounced, then we have to honour and respect that. At any level, right? At any level, we acknowledge that. Based on spiritual advancement. It has to be based on spiritual advancement. It can't be based on just a mere, the colour of the cloth that you happen to wear. So we have to see a Madhyamadhikari has to be, and that's what we should be aspiring to, has to be able to see, or should be able to see, that their own position and the relation and their the position. The spiritual position of others based on the symptoms. And so now he's recognizing that. He knew that his sons were far enlightened in spiritual advancement. And thus he should not express his anger before them. We'll see this especially in the remnants of Vedic culture. We see this uh, this disdain for emotional or vocal outbursts, right? That's considered poor behavior in spiritual circles, or even just in normal circles. If somebody gets angry or upset, then they're unable to control their senses. They're unable to control their mind and senses. Right? And so therefore, you know, not respected. If a person's not able to control their mind and senses and they get angry, then they're considered not very advanced. Just in general terms. Is that right? Who likes the boss at work who's always getting angry and yelling and shouting at them? No one. Nobody likes that. Which is interesting, you know, that's the children know how to upset their parents. But the parents have to keep cool. What? Parents have to keep cool. No shouting and yelling. Tolerate. Right? Shanti. But in some cases, it is appropriate for the parents or for the teacher or for the spiritual master to become forceful and angry at the disciples for their benefit, right? For their benefit. If the parents sees the child going out in the backyard with a box of matches, right? And he says, "What are you doing?" "Nothing." "What do you do?" "Ah, okay, all right. Off you go." "Going to burn down the backyard, maybe burn down the house." No? So it's a subtle, it's somewhat, something of a subtle, or a, it's an interesting, I saw this many times with one of my friends, who was very passionate and enthusiastic servant of Radha Ballabha, and would often get hugely absorbed and fully what's the word? Yeah, engaged in his service. And he would engage everybody around him as well in that service. And then they'd do something wrong and he would just absolutely explode. And then I'd see it in some of the Indian devotees. You know, they get very upset that he was so explosive. I just thought it was normal, you know. It's okay. Yeah. And in devotional service, you know, it can be excused. A devotee, very enthusiastic, very determined, and very, just like Lord Brahma, he's not criticized for the fact that he got angry at his sons. Right? It's to be expected. It's to be expected. Especially if somebody's, you know, Prabhupada would get angry at his disciples if they did something wrong. You know, and so in that sense, you know, yes, we should be spiritually advanced to the point where we're not disturbed, but at the same time, there are some things where we should be disturbed. And, you know, not, "Oh, it's okay," or, you know, "Matra spasasta kuntaya," right? "Sitoshna sukaduka daha." You know, happiness and distress, just be, you know, Don't be so attached, Prabhu. That's what the devotees would say. Don't be so attached. But we should be attached to the outcomes that we pursue in the performance of our devotional service, and not just dismiss them as being something material, because they're not. And so, you know, there is such a thing as a display of emotion or anger even that's appropriate in devotional service. What is it? Vacho vega manasa krodha vega. You know, the actions of anger, or the pushing of anger. Prabhupada mentions that can actually be used in Krishna service. You know, a teacher sometimes can get angry with the students if they're not behaving. And Prabhupada says you can pick up a stick, shouldn't use it, right? But, you know, it's one of the tools of the trade. Huh? When you're dealing with your children, you know, what's one of the tools of the trade? If you don't get angry, you're just all shanti shanti. They'll do anything. Right? You have to shout at them sometimes, otherwise they won't get the message. So, you know, there's appropriate behaviour and appropriate usage of anger and so forth. You know, if we're angry, if we're forever exploding all the time at the smallest little thing, then maybe that's not, you know, we need to do something about that. But there are times when it's appropriate. Even as members of the Hare Krishna movement, we shouldn't think, oh, everybody has to be shanti shanti. Right? No, not like that. Madhavendra Puri, you know, he was meditating on Radharani's feelings of separation from Krishna, and it was exhibiting that lamentation and Ramchandra Puri came, you know, and started preaching to him. You know, don't lament. Na sochati, na kamchati. Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma. Right? Yeah, we may be Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma. But when it comes to doing service, you know, Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, oh, shanti, shanti, yeah, that's good. That's a good program. That's what we'll do. Right? No, he said, no, kill them. Slaughter them. Right? That was his. So according to time, place and circumstance, then we'll use our various emotions or our talents, our energies in Krishna's service appropriately. Because we have to be careful. Anger is a very is a dangerous tool, if you like, because it can be overused. We see that in the example of Prithu Maharaj when, was it Prithu Maharaj? Who? Dhruva Maharaj. When his brother was killed, and he then took revenge on the Yakshas, and you know, he slaughtered a few million of them. And Kuvera had to engage somebody. Somebody had to come and tell him, you know, okay, it's appropriate to punish, you know, there should be some punishment, but, you know, perhaps we might have gone a little bit too far at this point, right? So it needs to be, you know, we engage these things. Vacho vegam, manasakroda vegam, jiva vegam, udurapasta vegam, etan vegam, yovishahita dhira. So one has to be sober in one's usage of these natural inclinations, these natural pushings. And anger is a natural, you know, it'll come about when we don't get what we want. Right? It's natural. If you don't get what you want, then you'll get angry. that right? You see it in children. They want something, mum says no, they just throw themselves on the floor and start kicking and screaming, going on. Especially in the supermarket. Right? This is a place where you throw maximum tantrum to get what you want. So, we need to be advanced enough to know how to be appropriately angry. Lord Brahma is exhibiting that. He's checking his anger. Oh, not the right thing to be angry right now in front of such advanced devotees. But that doesn't mean that in some circumstances, in some situations, we can't utilize a show of displeasure for the benefit of the person who we're educating or training. You know, do something wrong, and then we should show our displeasure. Although, having said that, what is the recommendation that Prabhupada says? You know, with our children, we can discipline them, but after a certain point, 15, right? Bash them up.
Yeah, you should correct them.
You can correct them. Yes, that's a good. That's how to put it. Correct them. But then after that, you have to make friends with them. Because they're just going to ignore you anyway. Right? My father didn't learn that until a long time. So there's some things to be learnt from these, the principles of managing anger management. You know, somebody's always angry, then we say they have to go for anger management lessons. Because you tell them that, and then guess what happens? They get angry. What do you mean, I've got to go for anger management lessons? I don't get angry. Huh? But it can be used. It must be used. The father should use some anger in controlling. You know, the king has to use anger sometimes to control the citizens. Otherwise, they'll misbehave. Right? So there's appropriate usage and inappropriate usage depending on the circumstance, time, place, and circumstance. As devotees, we should be becoming more and more expert in learning how to manage or how to deal in circumstances according to, you know, the person that we're dealing with, our situation, their situation, the circumstances. So that requires some learning. It often requires experience. Something that's, it's not acquired just through learning alone. It has to be acquired through practice and maturity. So we've seen that with Lord Brahma. He's checking himself. Because he knew that they were so detached from these, what might be called mundane responsibilities. They were so far advanced that it's actually better for them to continue as renounced brahmacharis, because that's their natural inclination. Their natural position, and of course they're globally, universally accepted as the examples of this particular behavior, manifesting or demonstrating their spiritual advancement. They're on the highest level of spiritual realization, and so therefore it's not necessary for them to go through any process of purification as the household ashram is meant to be, because they've already achieved the goal of it. And in order to maintain that position, they shouldn't be burdened with that responsibility either. There are other examples in the Bhagavatam where it was decided by the powers that be that it was appropriate for them, even though they're highly advanced and highly elevated, still it was appropriate for them to enter into the household ashram. But in the case of the four Kumaras, that wasn't appropriate. They're very elevated personalities, and so therefore it was appropriate for Lord, possibly inappropriate for him to even ask them to do the service. And certainly Lord Brahma realised that, and so therefore had to check his response. And what happens next is interesting. You know, when you check anger, right? When you're angry and you check it, what happens?
Stay in control.
Stay in control. Yeah, maybe in this case, didn't. Something popped out. And what happens, you know, when you get angry, what pops out? What's the symptoms of anger and things popping out? What pops? Huh? Eyes pop, yeah. Eyes pop out. Hands, arms pop out. Huh? Legs kick. These are the symptoms of anger. It's coming up here. So very interesting. The manifestation of anger and where he's going to live is coming up. Right? Where's anger come from and where's he going to reside now that he's manifest? So he manifests in shouting and yelling and eyes popping out and feet and legs, you know, that's one physical manifestation of anger. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions? Mahatma Ji.
One, about the appropriateness of anger.
Yeah.
When Srila Prabhupada was inaugurated in Amsterdam temple, there were no flowers and he got very angry. And the press was there. And somebody from the press said, please say Hare Krishna.
I think it was one of the... Yeah, Prabhupada was upset. One of the devotees, it was a young devotee, said, you know, just chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada did chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. So...
And an appropriate example is about Durvasamuni and Amrish Maharaj.
Yeah. Well, I think Durvasamuni is a personification, or he's the topmost inappropriate example of anger, right? Towards a devotee, and you can see what happens when anger is inappropriately used. Then Lord Vishnu personally came in the form of the Sudarshan Chakra to protect Amrish Maharaj. But the devotee shouldn't think, I'm a devotee, so therefore you can't chastise me. Right? If you do, then the Sudarshan Chakra is going to come and get you. Right? So that's why it requires a little bit of maturity. And you know, a proper understanding. But we shouldn't be surprised if a devotee gets angry. And you know, Lord Brahma, why is Lord Brahma getting angry in any case? Do you think? What's the main reason he's getting angry? Yeah, he can't do his service. Devotees get upset if they can't do their service. It's not that they're not generally worried about themselves. They're concerned about what should be done for Krishna. That's why I always... And you know, Prabhupada mentions in more than one place, or has mentioned in more than one place, getting chastised and corrected. Devotees actually look forward to that. Right? You don't want to be told you're a good boy all the time. Right? Because you're not, for a start. Right? We're not. And, you know, somebody's just telling you, oh, yeah, you're really good, you know, do everything fantastic, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, that just, you just get full of yourself. And we do make mistakes. That's, you know, we're fooling ourselves. That was self-deception, right? This is a symptom of material existence. Self-deception means we think we're doing everything perfectly. But we have to be careful of that, especially as young devotees, because we think that doing everything right is a symptom of advancement. So especially in the beginning, you know, we've got to learn all the mantras, and we've got to tie our dhoti and put the tilak on properly, and, you know, we tend to, and you know, after all, we're on the path of perfection, right? We are on the path of perfection. So we should arrive at being perfect someday, shouldn't we? Huh? So that day when we know all the mantras, we know when to bow down at the right time, we know when to say jai at the right time, right? Ki jai. One of Korma's friend's parents came to the temple and he heard the devotee saying, ki jai, and he thought, you know, he's going to die. So, you know, some odd understanding of what the Prema Dvani is, and then at the end, ki, die! Right. At the end, we're all going to die. Maybe that's what it is. So anyway, we know all, you know, we do all of the Hare Krishna things. We know all of the Hare Krishna things. And so we think, now I'm perfect. I don't do anything wrong anymore. But then when somebody tells us, because we did something wrong, then we get terribly offended. Oh, what are you thinking of me for? You know, I'm on the path of perfection and I already thought I was perfect. And now you're telling me that I'm not. That's not fair. Especially there's so many expectations on being perfect. In the, you know, we've got the perfect philosophy, we've got the perfect practice, and now I'm not perfect. But, you know, a devotee doesn't think they're perfect, actually. Humble devotee doesn't think they're perfect. They think they're full of faults. And we see that in the characteristics of, in the nature and character of many devotees. So, you know, if we're getting some chastisement or some correction from a senior devotee, from a senior, then we shouldn't resent that correction. If it's justified, you know, if it's correct, we should accept it. We should actually seek out that kind of correction from others in order to, you know, realize our faults. See, the perfection of a devotee is not in that he or she is perfect, but the perfection is that they realize, I make mistakes. I have the four defects. You know, it's self-deception to think that we're perfect. And so therefore we don't present ourselves as being perfect. We're perfect so long as we're following the process. And that means purifying and cleansing and realizing our faultiness, actually. And of course, from that comes humility. Self-realization means humility, and humility comes from knowledge. Real appreciation of where we're lacking in so many ways, or how much we're actually dependent upon Krishna for everything that, that takes place. Tony, you had a question?
Should I use anger wholly for my proponent's benefit and not for one of, and not for one bit for my catharsis of my angry emotions? Is the use of anger a controlled act like an actor?
As one gets older, or as one makes progress in spiritual life, then it's a use of a tool, not the taking out of one's frustrations on others.
Thank you.
Because very often anger just means, you know, being frustrated and taking it out on others. And that's why it's not respected in any culture, practically speaking. But, you know, Prabhupada says, you know, teachers shouldn't speak words that might upset or agitate others. But for his students' benefit, he can and should. Right? Must. Right? So, it's meant to be a tool used in Krishna's service. It's meant to be. That's how it's supposed to be utilised. Learning how to do that, there may be a few mishaps along the way. Right? Or if you're dealing with your children, for example. Which parents here sometimes get upset with their children? All of them. Right? Do you overdo it? Sometimes? Yeah, and you'll find out about it in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time. And your children will remind you of the time when you overdid it. Or maybe not that time, the times, plural. Yes,
Guruji. This loka can be this loka happens to be a best example to say that Krishna is the only independent reality and the rest all is dependent. Because Brahma, with the intention to carry on the workload,
his service,
generated from his thighs like the four Kumaras. But eventually he got angry. That all seems to say that Krishna's, it is one of the things that Krishna wanted to show that I am the independent.
But Krishna gets angry too.
Krishna gets angry too when?
When? Yeah. How many times do you want to, how many examples do you want? Mother Yashoda stopped feeding him, right? And he got angry. Right? Just like any normal child, he got angry because he wasn't being fed. He didn't get what he wanted. Right, so he got angry.
Yeah, that anger was to, just it was a play. It was not to...
I know that. We know that.
Yeah, but like when it comes to Brahma's case, Brahma had, like, there was nothing to show Krishna. It was to learn from Krishna.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That is what I just wanted to add.
Yeah, good. That's good.
Initially,
yep. Oh, so they should have been sent to the Grihastha Ashram as a result? Yeah. You're impersonous. Okay. Off to the Grihastha Ashram. Yes, but they were Brahmanandis, so on the spiritual platform, they realized that they weren't the body, that they were spiritual by nature. And their latent devotion was manifest when they smelt the fragrance of the tulsi. So And you know, that was in Vaikuntha. So how come they were in Vaikuntha? Pretty obviously elevated. Very, very elevated personalities. So even though externally manifesting somewhat of a impersonal tinge, apparently, but they smelt the tulsi, their devotional qualities were awakened. So very, very special devotees. All right, I think we should finish here. Conjuration of Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
I have no idea when to say jai.